Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode.
She said, you are one brilliant woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you're brilliant is because you have ADHD. And that was a moment I had a, huh? Like, I have ADHD?
Had you heard of ADHD at that point?
I did. You learn about it in school and psychology. And I was also planning to go into my master's program in psychiatric nurse practitioner. So
okay.
I had some knowledge of ADHD, obviously, when I was in the program. And when I saw her, I remember her telling me that. And I said to her, I think you're wrong. I'm not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not stupid. Are you kidding me?
Oh, so you automatically, had the stigma. Yes, yes.
You think I have ADHD? Maybe you have ADHD, not me. And I was like, and because I knew her like more of a colleague, I was like, No, I don't think you're right. Like, I was very frank with her. And she started smiling and giggling. And she didn't even take any offense to what I was trying to tell her. And she goes, Sahara, really? It's because you have ADHD. You're able to do all this stuff. And you're able to juggle all these balls.
Yeah.
But you have to understand you're unable to get this everything right at the perfect way because you're doing everything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that, and for me to accept that was the hardest part.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I always thought ADHD was people that were dumb, didn't get the whatever they're being taught, or really struggling with intellectual disability, maybe even dyslexia. I didn't think I had ADHD, and I had a hard time accepting it.
Yeah. So my knowledge of ADHD has always been kind of, ADHD stands for, what is it? Attention
deficit hyperactive
disorder, right?
Disorder, that's correct.
Yeah. So I think I just always assumed that it was lack of ability to focus on something, you know, when it comes to studies particularly. So I don't think until now you're explaining all of this that I even had a full understanding of what ADHD is. But everything that you're telling me, inability to regulate your emotions, not being able to prioritize, poor time management skills, you know, not being able to understand the importance of when something needs to be done versus when something can be put off. Again, prioritizing, I guess. So all of that is part of it.
Correct. And the thing is that part of it is also, we don't really talk about it and we don't really address it. When we think of ADHD, we think more, this is a societal stigma that only boys have ADHD. And the only idea of ADHD is tiny Timmy jumping off the wall. Or hyperactive, like jumping out, can't sit still, you know, talking too much, walking around, you know, overactive. That's what we think of when you hit ADHD.
Yeah.
But what people fail to understand is it was previously called ADD, which is attention deficit disorder. But now it's under the umbrella attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And there are three types. There's the inattentive type where this is Spacey Susie, where she's in class and she's just daydreaming. And she's, you know, easily distracted. She's more quiet. But she's in her own little mind. So that's the inattentive type.
Okay.
Then you have the impulsive type, which is fidgety. Mind you, you could also be fidgety and also be the inattentive. So you're fidgety. So you constantly need to maybe bang a pen or bite the eraser or do something with your hands, your legs, something. You're running, you're climbing, you're jumping. They tell you walking feet in the hallways, you're running. You can't. You have a hard time playing quietly. When they say whisper, you don't even know what a whisper is.
Okay. Yeah.
You're also getting easily distracted. And for you to follow instructions, because they come at you at so all at once, if it's a series of instructions, if they're not told to you one by one, you make careless mistakes. And that also goes for the inattentive type as well. So it's hard for them to follow instructions, follow through. And last but not least, it's really hard with the impulsivity is, especially when you're younger, is the calling out I realized about myself was, pick me, pick me. I know the answer. And my classmates said, put your hand down. Let's get somebody else a chance. And that was me because I know the answer. I could do it. So that impulsive, like me, unable to sit in my seat, jumping up my seat and answering, you know, asking, waving my hand. So those are kind of like the early signs of ADHD. But in girls, because of the societal stigma with girls, we fall through the cracks.
And then especially as South Asian women or girls.
Correct. Because if you think about it, the societal expectations of girls are what? If you look at the old movies in the 50s and the 40s, what are the secretaries? Women. So what do you mean women can't focus? We're the ones that are taking the notes. We're the ones that are making the appointments. Of course, we know how to prioritize. You know, we're the ones that are managing the meals at home. So the societal expectations of women, us women being so organized, really hampers our...
Oh, yeah. I think I've even heard like people say, oh, you can't keep a house clean, so you're not a true woman. You're not organized. That's such a womanly trait. What do you mean? You're a woman. How are you not organized?
Yes.
You know, these are all like labels that we're putting on women and these expectations that we have of women when we don't realize that we're human at the end, you know?
Yes, so true. And if you look at it too, when they did a lot of the studies on the ADHD, even from earlier research, there was a lot of male biases in the studies. So because if you're going to only do male studies, you're going to only think males have ADHD.
Yeah.
So having that male bias also puts us in the...
At a disadvantage.
Yes.
And you just fall through the cracks.
Correct. And again, with women, we have different symptoms than boys. The boy might be Tiny Timmy jumping off the wall, walking around, jumping and all this stuff. But us women, Spacey Susie, just because she's more quiet, shy, she may appear shy, but she's more daydreaming, or she doesn't seem to get the material. You have to repeat yourself constantly. Oh, she's just a girl. She's not getting it. Kind of like excusing that behavior because we're a girl.
Yeah.
Those things really harm us. And we also, a lot of times we mask our symptoms because of societal pressures.
Exactly.
So when you tell someone how do you not know how to keep your house clean? You're not a woman. This person will drive themselves insane in terms of anxiety to make sure their house is perfect.
It's the conditioning too, right? It's different expectations from men versus women. You know, men, it's like, take me as I am. For a woman, it's like, okay, what is the idea of a perfect woman? And let me be that woman. Strive to be that woman, even at a very detrimental cost to my own mental health.
Yes. And that's very important. You said that. And the thing is that imagine, so next time you go to someone's house, or if you just see, if their house is too clean, like a museum.
Yeah.
That really says a lot about themselves as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if a house is messy, it's lived in.
Yeah,
a house
exactly.
is supposed to have toys
signs
in between.
Of life.
Yes. Toys in between the cracks of sofas. Change in between the in your sofa. You're supposed to step on one or two Legos going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it, how are you even living life? Imagine a home that's so pristine and so clean. What do the kids get to enjoy?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a dirty home. It's not a messy home. It's a lived-in home. It's a home that's being properly used. And
exactly.
we need to start that narrative when we see a woman's like, oh, make that a common thing. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So now take me back to this moment. So you've had this diagnosis of ADHD. You didn't believe this initially. And then when did you actually come to terms with it and realize, you know what? I think she's right. I do have it. And what changes did you make, or how did you kind of shift your thinking? Did you have any moments where you felt, you know what, this all makes sense now?
I did my own research. I said, oh, hold up. I'll get back to you on that. Let's do a rain check on that. So I did my own research. And in doing my research, there was this book called Faster Than Normal by Peter Schenkman. And that book really opened my eyes about what ADHD was. And it really shifted my thinking from thinking that ADHD was a curse to it's a gift. Not only did the nurse practitioner's way of presenting it to me, saying to me, girl, you're so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think you don't have ADHD? It's because you're brilliant, you have ADHD. And then I realized, wow, it's because I'm so, it's not only like you said, what your idea of ADHD was, is just people who couldn't focus, but it's hyper-focusing and hyper-fixation. Mm-hmm. This is why people excel in these things. If you think about it, Albert Einstein is believed to have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him to, like, did you see his hair?
Yeah, I know.
Ask
That's
him to
how
organize
he's recognized.
Something. Yes. So ask him to organize, like someone in that, tell them to organize something they don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
But tell them to figure out quantum physics, they can figure that out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to explain to you about ADHD, is that whatever topic that person is really interested in, they really excel and they know it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
These kids that you see on TV, they know all the presidents by their, in order, all the countries in the world, or they know 5, 6, 7 languages. How do you think that's possible?
Obviously, because they're able to hyper-focus.
Yes. Yeah. So it's not necessarily just the ADHD, but also there may be other neurodivergence disorders they may have as well. So when I realized that, I was like, oh, wow, I may have ADHD. So my own research really helped me accept.
Understand it and accept
it. Yes.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, when I read that book, Faster Than Normal by Peter Schenkman, I felt like he was a fly in the wall my whole life and watching me my whole life. Like, how does he know that? How did you know that's what I was thinking about? Like, how did you know I forgot that?
So the book really validated all the feelings, thoughts, and actions that you had as a child or even growing up until that point. And it just kind of all made sense to you.
Correct. Correct. And when I realized that, I've kind of felt like, oh, wow, I felt a deep sadness. And the sadness lasted for, I would say, months, because the sadness came from a place with, I wish I knew.
Sooner.
I wish I had known earlier, the trajectory of my life would have been so much different. The issues I faced, the inner turmoil, the negative self-talk, the low self-esteem, the impulsive actions that I had, that I did, I wish I would have known so I could have somehow been different, or I would have been more aware of it.
But that's something that you wouldn't have even thought of, right? Growing up,
correct,
as we all did, as, you know, children of immigrant parents, they're busy just making a life here in this country. And we were kind of left to our own devices and figure a lot of things out on our own. And it's not that they loved us any less or that they were neglectful. They did what they had to do to make ends meet and to give us the future, right?
Correct.
I'm a firm believer in things happen when they're meant to happen.
Yes.
So the timing, I think maybe that was the timing for you, because you're finally at the point where you were able to understand this diagnosis, and at an advantage also because you were a nurse already. Mm-hmm. So you knew not to stigmatize it yourself and not to have, right, like to have that understanding that it's beyond your control. This is not something you could have controlled.
Correct, correct. But you have to understand my thought of process when I first was told. Now, mind you, I worked in mental health for 10 years as a floor nurse. So I worked in addiction. I worked in geriatrics, psychiatry. I worked in adolescent psych, eating disorders, substance abuse, in the most acute unit with psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had experience 10 years of this, but when so-and-so has this disorder, I'm okay with them having it. But when you say I have it,
it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yes, because that's my own bias against my own self. And I'm really showcasing my own biases that I've kind of picked up from my culture, from my understanding of my society that I live in. And so I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with this? I do have it. What do I do about this? And that was almost like a grieving period for me, because it really upset me that I didn't know. Like, how could I have not known? Why didn't I not know?
Yeah.
And so it really made me really, really sad, to be honest. But what I did with that sadness, I made it sure to empower me. So I wanted to use it as a motivation, that grief, like, okay, yes. 34 years had passed and I had just got the diagnosis that I have ADHD, you know, and this is 3 kids in, 12 years of marriage in, and I'm like thinking, oh my God, I got to do something to really pick myself up. Girl, pick up your big girl panties, shimmy on them, and, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk. That really empowered me to really take better care of myself, not only for myself, but for my kids.
Yeah.
And the more I learned about ADHD, I learned that it is hereditary. So I had to remove the shame and the blame that I felt with ADHD, because it runs in families.
And now you don't want to pass it on, obviously, that blame and that shame.
Correct. And I may possibly pass it on. And it's not necessarily that you got it out of thin air. It runs in families. You could get it from aunt, you could get it from uncle. It doesn't choose. Mental health doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious, I want to know, did you end up telling your parents, your family, like your immediate family, friends, once you were diagnosed?
Yes. So when I was diagnosed, I did not share that information with anyone else, because I had a hard time expecting it myself. When I started to, when I went to my master's program, I completed my master's as a psychiatric nurse practitioner myself. My way of presenting it to my family was educating them about it. And that would be in a way that if somebody did present with an ADHD symptom, or they had a moment and someone would make a comment like, she's sweet, but she's, you know, all over the place. I would say something like, you know, there may be a reason why she's all over the place. she's going through a lot. Let's cut her some slack. So easing into that, that accepting everyone, although they're very accepting of, you know, as you are, they take you as you are. That's one thing I can say about my family is all my sisters have different personalities and we're not alike in any way in terms of the personalities we have. But one thing that brings us all together is that the foundation we have. And that's what I'm saying is that when it comes to, as a Southeast Asian culture, the foundation of accepting others as they are is very important.
That's key.
Yes.
Yeah, it's key.
And reframing their thinking of that idea. Oh, you know, she's just like that. She's so sweet, but she's a little all over the place. Or yeah, she never knows how to maintain time. So I would say, cut her some slack. If you know she's struggling, maybe you could be the one to remind her, hey, don't forget, we have this time to be there. And you don't have to babysit her. If you don't feel comfortable about it, that's fine. But if you're going to make a comment about it, show up.
Yeah, exactly. So once you told your family, and obviously this is not right away, this is after you finish your master's program and now you're a psychiatric nurse practitioner. And obviously what you say carries weight. You have the experience and the knowledge to back it all up.
Correct.
At that point, was your family immediately on board as far as, okay, tell us how we can help you manage your ADHD?
So to be honest, my family, when it comes to mental health, they're very aware of mental health. And the way I kind of approached it was more educating them about it. And when it came to me, they also saw the change in me once I started to get my ADHD treated, once I started to value myself, once I started to take better care of myself, they noticed there's a change in me. And so my actions speak louder than my words.
Yes, always.
Yes. And so what really helped was opening their eyes to that. Mm-hmm. So, and to be honest, sometimes you cannot take someone out of their bubble of their own ideas. All you can do is put a seed in their mind.
Yeah.
You cannot make them accept it. And they may not accept it. They may not even want to even know about it. For them, ignorance is bliss. But my job was to plant a seed and awareness, because with awareness comes acceptance, understanding. So that was my whole goal. And I really didn't look for validation. I really didn't look for acceptance from my family because I knew they accepted me for who I was.
Yeah.
Whichever way I was, they accepted me. I knew that.
Exactly.
But for my own self, to accept myself, that was the hardest part. So that's what I'm saying. When I learned to accept myself, all I could do was educate my family. And that's my broader, bigger family, my extended family as well. And just tell them, it's okay. Like, you don't have to be perfect. It's okay if someone is doing this, and kind of change that mental stigma about mental health and also being so hard on yourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it's so important to have acceptance for neurodiversity. I always feel like, you know, we're very quick to judge. And what if instead of just judging, someone says something, acts a certain way that you don't think is normal, quote unquote, normal.
Or appropriate.
Instead of making a flippant comment about it, how different would it be if we were to just give that person some grace and just say, you know, for this person, maybe this action is the right action. You know, and just allow space for everyone to be different and to accept the differences, right? So what I want to ask you is, if someone listening to this is finding that maybe some of the traits that you mentioned is resonating with them, what would be the first step as far as, you know, what's the first thing that you would tell this person to do?
So for someone who may think that they may struggle with ADHD, or they may think that maybe their child has it or anything like that, is really talk to the doc, your professional, first your primary care doctor or your pediatrician for your child, and tell them what concerns you have. And these concerns, if they're validated by the pediatrician, or if the pediatrician says, you know, it's really not my specialty, but here's a referral, please go see someone in psychiatry, I would definitely take that. Mm-hmm. Get a referral to go to psychiatry and just get it assessed.
Yeah. And be honest, right?
Correct.
Be fully. I think that's, you have to be 100% honest with yourself. And, you know, a lot of times we tend to self-criticize a lot. Or also the other word I'm thinking of is, you know, when you're trying to control your thoughts, and you kind of have like this, you're explaining something, but you know, if you say this one thing, it's going to make you appear less of a woman, less of a person. So you automatically edit that.
Correct. You know? In your mind. Yes.
In your mind. And you only share what you think is relevant and not all the thoughts that are coming through your mind.
Correct.
I think that's important too, right? Is first being completely honest.
Yes.
And sharing that. And then, you know, understanding that if someone has these issues, it doesn't make them less of a person. Like you said, you're brilliant, right? Tell me a little bit about where you're at currently, having this, the experience, the diagnosis, accepting, learning about it, accepting it. Where are you now with it?
So right now in my life, I would say that I'm very happy with where I am in my space. I'm very comfortable with where I am. I am a mother of four children. I have my own practice in psychiatry, and I also love myself. And to be honest, I'm very happy with where I am in life. And that took a while to get here. But what I really noticed is that having a village, or creating your own village, surrounding yourself with like-minded people, with your own tribe and your own village, really lifts you up when you may be down.
Yeah.
And that's very important. So with that being said, I think it's very important that we women uplift each other. And for that, I have my sisters for support.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a blessing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you're fortunate that you have your sisters, you have support from your sisters, your family. But I would say that even if you are not blessed with a big family or a family that understands, then create your own family, like you said, right? That's very important. Surround yourself, you know, with people that accept you as you are and that are always there for you. You know, that support system is so important because we can't do it all by ourselves.
No.
And it's unrealistic to think that we can, right?
Correct.
You know, there's a reason. Even back in the day, people lived in villages. People lived, you know, together. It was a big part of
especially
the South Asian culture. Yeah. The sense of belonging, communities, like you said, you know.
But it's a more of a community society where everyone would watch each other's kids, and it takes a village to raise one child.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
it's very
like
true.
Like you mentioned too, and I'm saying as well, is that create your own village, create your own tribe. And if you really struggle with that and you can't find, if you feel like you can't find someone like that, maybe it's you. That's a lot of introspection you need to look within yourself. Maybe you're holding back.
Yeah.
And that you may need to really find out who you are before you even find that tribe.
Yeah.
But and on that note, I think that it's very important to mention that women should be uplifting women. And that we women, when we see one down, we say, girl, what are you doing down? You are amazing. Come on, we got this. We're going to be with you.
Yeah.
Grab one arm on the other one side and another woman grab the other arm and we get her up and we get her going. And she knows that we are her biggest rooters, supporters, and her biggest fan.
Exactly. If we can do that even for one person, imagine the effect that it would have, the overall effect.
Correct.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I really appreciate you, you know, coming on and sharing this journey with us, because I think just in talking about it, you're removing some of that stigma that exists with mental health, you know, especially in the South Asian community.
Yes.
And, you know, everything that you have to say, I feel like we have to have you come back and really dive deeper into, you know, ADHD or even just so many topics that I'm sure as a psychiatric nurse practitioner, insights that you have. So, you know, thank you, Sahara, again, for coming on. And the one thing that I will ask you, we always at Rue, we like to sort of end our episodes with a golden biscuit, which is just a little key takeaway from the episode. What would you say the golden biscuit of today should be?
I think the golden biscuit for today should be to take better care of yourself. When it comes to always, oh, I got to take care of the baby, I got to take care of this, I got to take care of this. When was the last time you took care of yourself?
Yeah.
When was the last time you really asked yourself, how do I feel? And maybe you don't have that luxury in your day to do that because you're so busy and overwhelmed with what's going on. And that in itself is a problem.
Exactly.
Because you need that. You need to nourish yourself both physically and mentally to be the best mom, to be the best spouse, to be the best sister, and to be the best you can be.
Yeah, exactly. No, 100%. We've mentioned this at Rue before as well, is that you cannot be the best mom or the best wife or sister, daughter, whatever, you know, relations you have in life. You cannot be the best version of yourself if you are not taking care of yourself. I think there's a lot of guilt associated with that. People feel guilty for giving time to themselves, especially us South Asian women. We have to remove that. We have to understand that by giving ourselves that time, we are showing up as a better version of ourselves for everyone else. And we're able to take care of everyone else much better if we are taking care of ourselves. So I love that. That's a great golden biscuit. So
thank you
so much again. I really, really appreciate the time that you took to come on and share this amazing insight and overall the journey that you've gone through and where you are now. I admire you. And, you know, we'll for sure have you come back on again at another time and talk about other pressing South Asian issues that, you know, we all face.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Thank you for listening to Rue. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at ruedaraz@gmail.com. That's ruedaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.